The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Iran wants to deal with us, but they don't know how. They really don't know how. We had a meeting with them on Saturday. We have another meeting scheduled next Saturday. I said, that's a long time. You know, that's a long time. So I think that might be tapping us along. But Iran has to get rid of the concept of a nuclear weapon. They cannot have a nuclear weapon. He can't have a nuclear weapon. Nobody can have. We can't have anybody having nuclear weapons, you know? We can't have nuclear weapons. And I think they're tapping us along because they were so used to dealing with stupid people in this country. And I had Iran perfect. You had no attacks. You would have never had October 7 in Israel, the attack by Hamas, because Iran was broke. They were stone cold broke when I was president.
This is going to be much about verification on the enrichment program and then ultimately verification on weaponization. That includes missiles, the type of missiles that they have stockpiled there, and it includes the trigger for a bomb. And I think we're here to have, as the president indicated, and I take my direction from him every day that I go to work, we're here to see if we can solve this situation diplomatically and with dialogue. The first meeting was positive, constructive, compelling.
More dialogue, and as he has said before, he thinks dialogue can solve everything. You see the Trump administration changing its tune. Even just looking at it compared to last week, we wrote about this morning in the Trumpet brief or the morning brief. They're on the pathway, Iran, to getting a nuclear weapon, and there's reports now where America is satisfied with just limiting Iranian enrichment to 3.67%, which is very, very similar to the JCPOA, which, of course, was authored by the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. You can leave us some comments there, or you can email the show if you want to send in some feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. So as I say, it's in the morning brief. I'll get to that in just a second, but there's one Israeli journalist writing about this limitation, which is not much of a limitation, to just reduce back the Iranian enrichment. I mean, really, they're within weeks of getting a bomb. They've got the pieces in place. And then here comes Witkoff riding in. I mean, Donald Trump, you heard in the first bit of that cold open. I mean, he sees that they're just kind of tapping us along. And yet still there's plenty of dialogue. Still there's plenty of shifting. You see it with Putin. You see it with Iran. You see it with Israel. You see it with Hamas. I mean, even with the tariffs. One week we say this, and then the next week it's completely different. You've got to give us back all the hostages, or you know what's about to break loose. Melanie Phillips has a fair bit to say on that in a column that she had yesterday as well. We'll get to that later. I mean, just last week we were talking about the U.S., I mean, complete denuclearization. It's got to be, like President Trump indicated there in the first bit, no nuclear weapons. Nothing of the sort. Now limiting Iranian enrichment. This is from an Israeli journalist who tweeted, "This is absolutely insane. Witkoff tells Fox that Trump is seeking to limit Iran's enrichment to 3.67%. So basically, JCPOA and the Islamic regime in Iran is saved from collapsing once again. We're not only saving Iran from collapsing, we're saving JCPOA, the Obama plan. What was it my father called that as Obama was leaving office there at the end of 2016? Well, really, it came into play at the start of 2016, the last year of his second term. And my father called it the worst foreign policy mistake or blunder in U.S. history. It says, if this happens, it will be an unprecedented betrayal of the Iranian people. I mean, it's a betrayal of the Israeli people, too. But she's writing here about just the Iranian citizens that see that the regime is on the verge of collapse. And yet here comes the lifeline. Here comes the rescue line. It says here, unprecedented, not because the West hasn't thrown Iranians under the bus before, but because we're at a time in which this terrorist dictatorship is already on the verge of collapse. We just need to stop saving them. And who is it that comes in at the last minute to save Iran, the regime, the mullahs? Well, that would be the United States. It says, even after this regime shoots protesters, well, it talks about just how brutal this dictatorship is. But it says the U.S. thinks limiting Iranian enrichment to 3.67% will fix the problem. And then she writes, unbelievable arrogance. And that's what you see coming from America, particularly with respect to foreign policy. You know, I was watching, I haven't done this in months, maybe years, one of the funny shows last night. You know, the comedians that are not so funny. It was a long montage or monologue of all of these Trump supporters and members of the administration going on and on about just how perfect and genius this administration is and how they're making so much progress and they're so excited and moving forward. They can do no wrong. And usually you sit there and you cringe. I mean, we've played some of the clips on this show of the comedians. You cringe at what the comedians were saying. As it happens, I've got to admit, some of the clips that the comedian was showing were cringeworthy. You're like, oh, wow. I mean, think about just how different it is, the commentary from a year ago. When a year ago, you had a lot of conservative commentators rightfully defending Donald Trump against all of these vicious attacks, even assassination attempts. And of course, we were there saying, look, he's going to come back. God's going to protect him. And he did. I mean, this is dramatic fulfillment of prophecy. But then you look at just how quickly everything shifts and changes. An administration gets in there. There were demands on Israel to, you know, bring on a ceasefire before January 20th, before inauguration. We've got to have the ceasefire because, hey, the peacemaker is here. And now there's peace. Israel's got to stop shooting. The Ukraine war is going to be over in a day. The hostages are going to come home on day one. That was all the talk. And as it turns out, that's all that it was. Dialogue. Has dialogue solved all the problems of this world? I mean, Witkoff, you have to give it up as far as energy is concerned. He's hopscotching the world. I think this was his fifth meeting with Putin. We'll get to that in just a second. The more details emerge of the deal with Iran that President Trump wants to make, the more it looks like the Barack Obama deal that Trump killed in 2018. That's from the Morning Brief, Joel Hilliker, this morning. Trump is fine with an Iranian nuclear program. It says the president means what he says, which is they cannot have a bomb, Steve Witkoff tells Fox. What does that mean? That Iran must limit uranium enrichment to 3.667%. Basically, the same approach as Obama's nuclear deal. And look at how conservatives were in an uproar over the JCPOA. The Obama nuclear deal. The Obama deal, which basically just cleared the way for that. As long as they stretched it out over time, then they could eventually have a nuclear bomb. And here comes Witkoff. And it's the same deal. President Trump's maximum pressure campaign, threats of sanctions on Iran's oil and drone networks, secondary tariffs on countries trading with Iran, deploying B-2 stealth bombers capable of targeting Iran's underground nuclear facilities, repeated warnings of severe military consequences, had Israelis and even Iranians who opposed their radical regime hoping for a decisive resolution to the threat of a nuclear Iran. I mean, with all the bloviating just a couple months ago, you had Israelis hopeful that maybe the threat will finally be gone. Not so now. You've got Israeli commentators or journalists like the one I just quoted to you, horrified. What is happening? This is unbelievable arrogance. How do you reason with these madmen? Well, I guess you send in Witkoff, and he'll talk some sense into them. The underlying delusion that human nature is good, that if you just sit down and you talk to the dictators or the tyrants, everything can be solved. Everything can be solved with dialogue. I mentioned Melanie Phillips in her piece. She says, before he became president, Trump said that once in the White House, he would end the war in Ukraine on day one. Nearly 3 months on, all he's done is prompt Russia's Putin to stick a finger in America's eye by inflicting yet more atrocities on Ukraine, while Trump even now seeks to excuse or sanitize Putin's aggression, an aggression that Trump refuses to see threatens the peace of the world by facilitating Putin's declared aim of recreating the old Soviet empire with himself as czar. This is what my father has said from the beginning. Putin's aim is to rebuild the old Soviet empire. And he's been on the march for many years now, expanding his territory. Trump also said that if Hamas didn't release the remaining Israeli hostages by the time that he took office, that he would open up the gates of hell. 3 months on, only a few hostages have been released, and the gates of hell remain firmly closed. Nothing has happened. No consequences. Lots of flip-flopping. What does the Bible say about a double-minded individual? There's instability. And that's what we're seeing in the world today. It's an unstable world. It's not like it's just America. I'm not suggesting that. It's all over. But here comes Jeroboam. God sent him to save Israel from being blotted out. But he did not send him to save the world or to bring peace to the world. Far from it. It's one final opportunity for us to turn to God in repentance, as I was saying on yesterday's show. It does show how merciful and patient God is. He's giving us an opportunity to look to him. He's the peacemaker. He's the only one that knows the way to peace, God. And yet here we are, looking to the ambassadors of peace, thinking that dialogue, 1, 2, 3 meetings, 4 meetings, finally, I mean, as he said about Putin, Witkoff, it was compelling. I sat with Putin and it was compelling. What was it George W. Bush said? That he saw Putin's eyes and he saw in his eyes a man he could trust. It says here, if Hamas didn't release, well, I read that. Last week, Trump declared the U.S. would hold high-level direct talks with Iran at a very big meeting, quoting Trump. The talks in Oman turned out to be only indirect. Today, Trump complained that Iran was tapping us along. Is anyone confident that he will properly follow through on this insight? You heard it in the cold open. I think they're tapping us along. Okay, if that's the case, then what's next? Just send Witkoff over there for another meeting? Or have another meeting this weekend? That's what's scheduled. Melanie Phillips says, Trump is now perilously close to losing all credibility on the global stage by being portrayed as a bloviator, a busted flush who threatens but never carries through. See, on the one hand, he wants to negotiate peace the world over. And yet when dealing with unreasonable dictators, sometimes it takes a show of force. to make the peace. But that's not something that this administration wants to initiate because, again, no wars, no foreign wars. And so world leaders, particularly those heading up adversarial nations, like Philip says, they see what's happening. They see what's said and they see what's done or not done following through. And Trump is being portrayed abroad as a bloviator. It's, again, we got to tell you the truth. We've got to have some. If JCPOA was bad, if that was the worst foreign policy decision in U.S. history, then what's this one? When it's virtually the same. Listen to General Jack Keane. He was on Fox Business, I think, yesterday, clip 6.
Yeah, well, I think my expectations are pretty low. Iran is summarily rejecting any thought of dismantling the program themselves. I mean, what they want to do is move back to what they would define as commercial civilian nuclear power enrichment program, which is low-grade enriched uranium. Back when we had the nuclear deal with the Obama administration is what they're really talking about.
They just want JCPOA back. That's all. And more, this is the direction that Witkoff is headed in. It's insanity. we take an old playbook, in this case from the Dear Leader. We dust it off, and we put it forward, and then there's so much confidence. You saw it in that montage on the Funny Man show last night. There's so much confidence, so much self-confidence. Where does that lead you? How does that end? You know, I mentioned in a message over the weekend, the war that Christ had at Gethsemane, the war of the wills, his will versus the Father's, and thankfully for the good of mankind, he submitted to the Father's will. Nevertheless, God, not my will, but your will be done. This was a beautiful evening, an all-night session. Prayers of submission to the Father's will. But right before that section, you can see it in Matthew 26, the disciples, led by Peter, said, hey, we're never going to forsake you. We're willing to die for you. That's the exchange where Jesus then said to them, Peter, listen, by the time this day is over, you're going to deny me 3 times. And you read later in the chapter how that when push came to shove, all 11 disciples that were left, Judas, of course, had left earlier, they fled. When the persecution set in, they all were so confident that they would stay with Christ. And where did that self-confidence get them? It didn't get them very far. Turns out they were totally unprepared for the intensity of that trial. And they fled. And that's something that Jesus could have done if he submitted to his own will. Instead, he submitted to the Father's will. And he faced the persecution. And he willingly surrendered himself to the authorities, even though he had done nothing wrong. Betrayed by the kiss of Judas. Listen again to the same general, clip 7.
Because Iran has technology that has advanced as well as their engineers. They have developed advanced centrifuges. They can make enriched uranium very rapidly. They're right now capable of producing 6 nuclear weapons within a number of weeks because they've already developed the enriched uranium to the levels needed for that weaponization. So we have to understand who Iran is today. We know what they're going to do. They'll say, okay, we'll go back to those low-level restrictions. We'll remove centrifuges. We'll do this. We'll do that. And then what'll happen? They'll go to a secret site and begin to rapidly enrich their uranium to weaponization. That's what they'll do. That's the reality of it. That's why they have to dismantle the program with independent inspectors that go anywhere, anytime, and do it by a date certain. Without that rigor there, Iran will eventually get a nuclear weapon.
That's true. As he said there, they've got to dismantle the program. That should be the demand. The thing of it is, that was the demand. In recent weeks, it certainly was, coming from Trump's officials. But now it's just low-level restrictions. You can go ahead and continue with the program, keep the uranium in production, just make sure it's at a low enough level and allow for occasional inspectors to come in. But like he points out, and this is what they have done historically, the whole world knows this. They'll just move the heavy-duty operations to a secret site, probably deep underground somewhere. And eventually, like he says there, they get a nuclear weapon. This is really difficult to wrap our minds around, because in the first term, for all the attacks that they leveled, the radical left, against Donald Trump, I mean, he was, many were saying in Israel, the greatest friend that Israel had in a president, perhaps in history. Move the embassy to Jerusalem and so on. A friend of Israel. And then Donald Trump, he comes back in as God said that he would. And it's kind of hard to imagine, well, okay, this was prophesied, but how could a friend of Israel eventually drive Israel to a traditional enemy, the Assyrians? Well, now you look at what's happening and you think, I think everything is lining up just the way God said it would. One of our news gatherers sent me this. This is from our Zechariah booklet, my father's booklet. You can call our operators and request your free copy. Today, the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. But it says in the Zechariah booklet, one final note on this passage. Look again at Zechariah 11 and verse 14. That's where it talks about the brotherhood, the band and the brotherhood being broken. That close brotherly relationship between Ephraim, Manasseh, and little Judah in the Middle East. That's the U.S., Britain, and Israel. It says, of course, that is spiritual in the context of the church, but I believe it may also apply on a physical level to America and the nation called Israel or biblical Judah today. Listen to this. A survey taken in the Arab world said that the number one reason the people hate America is because it supports Israel. Our will is deteriorating rapidly, my father says. Is it possible that Americans will begin to think, why are we making ourselves such a target over that little country? This could be a prophecy of a rift between these two countries, one that would leave Judah very alone just before half of Jerusalem is taken by the Arabs. How could this rift develop during the Trump years? Well, maybe we're getting a bit of a preview of that now. Here you've got Witkoff reaching out to the mullahs, reaching out to Putin, demanding certain things of Hamas and then not backing it up. And what must Israel be thinking? Hang on a second. This isn't the Trump administration I remember from 2018. The one that came in and said, get JCPOA out of here. That's ridiculous. That was a capitulation. That was a total surrender. And now, you know, not so much. Now I think we can resurrect it. Now I think with some minimal restrictions that Iran can go forward and we can welcome that. We can send them a lifeline and welcome them right back into the international community. What are we thinking? Well, just sit down and have some dialogue. And this time around, even if it's blowing the dust off of JCPOA, you've got Trump. And Trump can do no wrong. Trump hasn't made any mistakes. Trump is a peacemaker. Trump isn't weak like Biden. That's the thinking. And here, right alongside all of this, you've got more and more conservative commentators being exposed for their they're not so subtle anti-Semitism. I've got an article a little bit later about conservatives revising the history and dogpiling on Winston Churchill as if he was the bad guy in World War II. It's unbelievable. Satan and his influence, it is alive and well. You see its fingerprints on so many things. Even with respect to our take on history, some very smart, well-educated people that are coming out with some deranged reasoning. Jeremiah 6 and verse 14 says that our leaders in the last days will be crying out, "Peace, peace," when there is no peace. You look at the admiration that Witkoff has for Putin, the embrace of these two, or multiple times that they've embraced. He's smart. He's capable. It was a compelling discussion. We're going to be able to work together. And meanwhile, Putin just gets more and more of what he wants. I mean, it's looking like there may be an end to those hostilities at some point, but we'll see how it's negotiated and what Putin ends up with in the end. That'll tell us everything that we need to know. But coming back to the peacemakers, making the rounds, your Bible says that when they say peace, peace, just be ready, because sudden destruction is coming. Really what we're seeing are the peacemakers, the diplomats, just glossing over the insoluble problems that are everywhere around us. Now, you can't fault someone for trying to be positive and optimistic, but you don't want to just gloss over obvious, like the general just said there. I mean, this is what Iran does. This is how they conceal their true intentions. Eventually, they're going to get a bomb. Unless the program is completely dismantled, unless the regime collapses, and that's the thing. It's on the verge of that, or it was. I mean, even Donald Trump drew attention to this out on the campaign trail. He's like October 7 never would have happened because Iran was on the verge of collapse. And then Joe Obama threw them a lifeline. Well, look at history now. Recent history, it's repeating itself. So much confidence, overconfidence, self-confidence. I'll never leave you. I'll be with you to the end. We're seeing a lot of flip-flopping. Say one thing one week and then try something different the next week. A double-minded man. Unstable. Unstable with respect to the ongoing discussions, negotiations with Vladimir Putin. Here again, listen to Witkoff. He was on with Sean Hannity last night, clip two.
Is there with Putin a deal emerging, or is he trying to buy time knowing that Putin sees a window of opportunity without hundreds of billions of U.S. dollars in weaponry, you know, giving him a military advantage? Do you really see a deal emerging? Are you confident?
I think you used a very good word there, Sean, emerging. I do. This is the third meeting I've had with him. This last meeting lasted close to 5 hours. We had two of his key advisors in the room at the time, Ushakov and Kirill Dmitriev. And it was a compelling meeting. And towards the end, we actually came up with, finally, but I don't mean it in the way that we were waiting. I mean it in the way that it took a while for us to get to this place. What Putin's request is to have a permanent peace here. So beyond the ceasefire, we got an answer to that.
Putin just wants a permanent peace. And again, this is the third meeting, went on for 5 hours. And the reason he stresses the details of the length and who was there is because, as I say, he's a firm believer that dialogue can solve everything, can solve all the problems. This is at The Guardian in the UK. It says the war between Russia and Ukraine is approaching a historic turning point. Unless the Trump administration adjusts course, U.S. military aid for Ukraine is about to cease. Vladimir Putin is stalling the Trump administration's ineffective pursuit of a ceasefire as he waits for Biden-era military aid deliveries to run dry. Trump's already revealed his hand. Look, we're not going to keep pouring money into Ukraine. We're not going to keep giving Zelensky a blank check. And Zelensky's out there saying we've got to have U.S. aid and so on and so forth. And as I've said before on this show, Zelensky's got his problems and there's plenty of corruption to go around in Ukraine. But Putin knows, drag it out and we get what we want. The money runs dry and Ukraine has no choice but to capitulate, to give us what we want. Just wait till all the aid runs dry. That's the strategy. Over the weekend, shortly after the Russian president met with the U.S. Representative Steve Witkoff, the Russian military launched a horrifying ballistic missile attack in Sumy that killed dozens of Ukrainian civilians. Putin is biding his time, eager to see whether the Ukrainian army will buckle in the absence of U.S. military aid. And he said recently, there are reasons to believe that we will finish them off. That's a quote. That's a quote from Putin. And right as he's saying these things to his people or to the media over there, Witkoff comes in and says, hey, I've talked to him 5 hours. And guess who else was there? I mean, his top aides were there. I think we've got this sorted out. He's a smart man. He's brilliant. He wants peace. He wants a permanent ceasefire. Even if Russia is unable to capture much more territory, Putin will still wait for Ukraine's position to become significantly more desperate before making any serious decisions about the end of this war. And so Putin just, you know, drags his feet. What was the term that President Trump used regarding the Iranian negotiations? He said there, you heard it in the cold open, they're just tapping us along. Well, that's what Putin's doing. He's just tapping along Witkoff. Witkoff's met with him 3 times. The last time, 5 hours. Well, there's probably another time here in a few weeks. Maybe another meeting or more dialogue a few weeks after that. And at some point, the aid to Ukraine runs dry and that's it. Lights out. Putin gets all the territory that he's acquired and he's a happy man. Yes, he's been weakened. Yes, he's lost a lot of soldiers, a lot of Russian soldiers. But he's building the empire. He's taking the long view. And the United States is being played. Tapping us along. Isn't that a perfect way to describe the way Hamas negotiators have been working? Iranian negotiators have been working? Russian negotiators have been working. Just tap along the Trump administration. Yes, you'll have to endure through some tough talk. There's going to be some bloviating. But just tap it along and you'll get what you want in the end. It says, as a baseline, European countries should accept more risk tolerance in donating their own military equipment to Ukraine. Well, this is the Guardian's take on it. Let's just listen to one more clip from Witkoff on with Hannity, clip 3.
I believe there's a possibility to reshape the Russian-United States relationship through some very compelling commercial opportunities that I think give real stability to the region, too. Partnerships create stability.
Well, you know what? Money solves a lot of problems, Steve. You've been a successful businessman your whole career.
I'm not sure I'm watching Fox News or MSNBC. Partnerships bring stability. And then you have Hannity for his part. Money solves a lot of problems. Money? We've been throwing trillions of dollars to the whole world. I've covered this with you on the show. This is what Doge is trying to cut back. It's just throwing money to the wind. Printed money, monopoly money, worthless money, but U.S. dollars nonetheless. And the whole world has been tapping into the wide open cash machine. Money solves a lot of problems. No, it doesn't. Obeying God is what solves problems. Money creates a lot of problems, actually. Paul said to Timothy that money is a root of all evil. It's one of them. It's not the only root. But look at how much problems, how many problems money causes in the world today. As I say, you have to kind of pinch yourself. Am I listening to Fox News or is this Joe Scarborough? This J.D. Vance, well, I'll get to it. Let me get to Isaiah first. The prophet Isaiah first, then we'll get to J.D. Vance. Isaiah 33, verse 3, it says, at the noise of the tumult, the people fled. At the lifting up of yourself, the nations were scattered. It says in verse 9, the earth mourns and languishes. Lebanon is ashamed and hewn down. This is all talking about a time period just before the Great Tribulation, the prophesied Great Tribulation. And you can't just dismiss this prophecy here and say, well, it was fulfilled, you know, centuries ago. Jesus picked up on this in the Olivet prophecy and said, no, Great Tribulation is coming. And it's going to happen just before I return to this earth. If I go, I'm coming back. Read it in John 14. Jesus Christ will return. He's given us signs. We don't know the day or the hour, but we know when it's near. We know when it's at the door. Right there in the prayer outline, he admonished us, those in God's family, to pray thy kingdom come. Pray for God's will to unfold on this earth as it does in heaven. Pray for God to fulfill his will through the church, the work of the church. The whole focus should be on the kingdom. Set your mind on the things above. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, Matthew 6:33. This is a hopeful message. There are some sobering prophecies, but it culminates in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's what we want to keep our minds on. That's what the disciples of old were asking Jesus about. Show us the signs. Tell us what's going to happen in the lead up to it so we're ready, so we're prepared. Well, that's what this program is all about. We want to get you ready for the return of Jesus Christ. You don't want to be caught unawares. Now, that's talked about in 1 Thessalonians 5. It's talked about in the Olivet prophecy there at the end of Matthew 24. Jesus Christ returning to this earth at a time when human beings are crying out, peace, we've got peace. Look at this passage in Isaiah 33. Notice verse 7. Behold, their valiant ones shall cry without. The ambassadors of peace shall weep bitterly. You see, all the famous ambassadors, all the ones making the rounds on the talk shows, the news programs, all the ambassadors that believe. I mean, they have confidence. They have confidence in themselves, and they also have confidence in Islamic fascists. They have confidence in authoritarian dictators. They have confidence in terrorist regimes. They think they can talk sense into them just with a little bit of dialogue. That's dangerous. What a miscalculation. Many miscalculations, in fact. Ambassadors, you see, really, when you get to it, you see the ambassadors have not just failed to look to God for guidance and direction. We have rejected God. We would prefer God to just keep his nose out of our business. Let things play out the way we think that they should go. Mr. Armstrong, I may not have time to get to this, so maybe we can play it now, but if I have to play this again with a Bible study segment, I'll do it because it's just that good. Listen to clip one.
Now you look about you today and in the churches that you find today, they no longer practice the same kind of customs that they did in Jesus' day. For instance, in those days, even the Gentile churches with the Apostle Paul, they met on the day that is now called Saturday, not on the day that is Sunday. And it was a great long time after that the churches began to have their meetings on Sunday. They observed the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, the day of Pentecost, the Feast of Trumpets, the day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. You don't find any churches doing those things today. Now, I know that those who are in these things are well-meaning, and they're very sincere, and they only mean good, and they've only done the thing that seemed right to a man, and it seemed to them that it was good and it was right. I guess they never read in the Bible that there is a way that seemeth right unto a man, the ends thereof are the ways of death. And that the Bible says, lean not to your own understanding, and that the way to find Christ and the way to find God is to forsake your thoughts and your ways. And your thoughts and your ways are the ways that seem right to you. Not wrong, but right. And perhaps they never read in the Bible that the prophecy was that the church would become deceived and all this world would become deceived by the false doctrines of paganism. And that's exactly what has happened.
And it's all recorded in the pages of your Bible, as relevant today as it's ever been. The last reference there, Revelation 12:9. The whole world is deceived, including the religious world. You know, we had Passover just recently, God's family. And everything, you know, from the beginning of the service, the content, you know, the symbols that we use, the foot washing ordinance, John 13. Changing the symbols, Luke 22, Matthew 26. John 13 to 17 is the entirety of the Passover ceremony that Jesus gave. I mean, that's like a fifth of John's gospel. This is Jesus observing the Passover with the disciples. At what point along the way did all of that change? And then the world, the traditional Christian world, just immerse themselves into Babylonian customs that have no basis or grounding in the Bible. How did this happen? How do we get so far removed from the teachings of the Bible? Well, like I had it for you as a Bible study segment. I'll get to it this week. The proverb says, don't lean to your own understanding. You see, like Mr. Armstrong said there, we have to forsake our thoughts. And that's hard to do because we think our thoughts are right. There is a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The whole point of God's plan and purpose, his plan of redemption, his plan of salvation, is for man to forsake his thoughts, his ways, and to submit to the will of the Father, just like Jesus did at Gethsemane. But man is proven incapable, well, maybe unwilling is a better word. It is incapable too, because man has been cut off. And unless God performs a miracle and opens our minds, you see, we're seeing the end result of 6,000 years of mankind being cut off from God's truth, from God's revelation, from God's will, from God's government. We're going our own way. And we're about to see just how that's going to turn out. It's not going to be good. This is from Unheard. It's a column by J.D. Vance, the U.S. vice president. It's not, or maybe it's an interview with him. I didn't check exactly, but this is the article. It's not good for Europe to be the permanent security vassal of the United States. So says J.D. Vance during a phone conversation with Unheard on Monday. His first major interview with the European outlet since taking office as VP. The backdrop is a week of turmoil on financial markets triggered by Trump's Liberation Day tariffs. The decision to apply and then partially rescind hefty tariffs on European allies, combined with a barrage of harsh statements about Europe from Vance, both public ones and leaked private messages, has left many on the continent wondering whether America can still be thought of as a friend. Vance's answer? Yes, provided European leaders are prepared to assume a more independent role on the international stage. This has the Trump administration's blessing, as we've been saying. Nobody sees this as possibly developing into a problem. Because, look, if we have dialogue, it's all going to work out in the end. That's the thinking. He says, I love Europe. Vance tells me in a wide-ranging interview from his office in the West Wing, showcasing a diplomatic side that has not always been front and center. I love the European people. I've said repeatedly that I think that you can't separate American culture from European culture. We're very much a product of philosophies, theologies, and of course the migration patterns that came out of Europe that launched the United States of America. Europe's leaders are a different matter. Take Ukraine's president, Zelensky, who in a recent interview with the American TV program 60 Minutes charged Vance with somehow justifying Russia's invasion of his country. Basically, Vance's message to Europe is that, look, you've got to become independent. And this will be good for you, and it'll be good for us. Go it alone. We don't want you to be our vassal state anymore. We want you to build your own military, to have your own independence as a European superpower. I mean, this just seems right. These are the thoughts coming from world leaders. And if you don't know anything about Bible prophecy, I mean, you can go along with it as well and think, well, maybe this will work out. Maybe this is for the best. This is from American Prospect. How the euro can replace the dollar. You see articles like this all the time now. Germany's, it's going full bore ahead with the European military, German military. This one here, it says, normally during a chaotic trading situation, anxious financiers run to what has long been the safest of investments, dollars and dollar assets like the U.S. government debt. That drives the value of the dollar up and the interest rate on the debt down. Instead, we're seeing the opposite. We touched on this last week. The dollar is falling against other currencies, and interest rates on American debt are increasing. As yet, these movements are relatively modest and may represent nothing more than chaos in the market. However, they do indicate a likely weakening of confidence in the stability and security of the dollar as a global reserve currency. And for these people, I'm not sure where American Prospect or who works for them necessarily, but for these people, it's perfectly okay. Look, the euro needs to replace the dollar. Right now, it's at about a 60% to 20% ratio. The dollar dominance at 60%. But they're saying here, look, euro can close that gap. Why not? People don't trust the United States. They look at the U.S. economy and they see instability. And they're right. They're right. It says here, a reserve currency, of course, is one that is used to settle international transactions. Today, the dollar makes up about 60% of foreign currency reserves, the euro about 20%. It says, for years now, various people have predicted the collapse of the dollar, upset by the American addiction to cutting taxes on the rich and the resulting government borrowing. They don't get everything right here. In any event, this is what the world needs. I mean, we're now talking about a new world order, not the one in the sense of, you know, a couple decades ago. But Trump has come in and, I mean, it's disrupted globalism and we've got a new world. Everything's in realignment. And you've got J.D. Vance out front saying, Europe, just go it alone. You have our blessing. We're going to be allies forever. The channels of dialogue are always going to be open. I love Europe. This chairman of the U.S. Council of Economic Advisors, this is Stephen Miron. He published a piece arguing that the U.S. should just surrender its dollar dominance. Why not? His paper says the root of the economic imbalances lies in persistent dollar over-evaluation that prevents the balancing of international trade. And this overvaluation is driven by inelastic demand for reserve assets. As global GDP grows, it becomes increasingly burdensome for the U.S. to finance the provision of reserve assets and the defense umbrella as the manufacturing and tradable sectors bear the brunt of the costs. How much longer before some prominent economic officials in the Trump administration come out and say, you know what? I think, dollar dominance, that's of the past. We've got to move forward with some new ideas, some new thinking. Not that you don't want to learn from mistakes and change course, but when you see the constant flip-flopping, that verse I alluded to earlier, James 1 and verse 8, a double-minded individual is unstable in all his ways. And what we're seeing in America, what we're seeing the world over, is instability. There's just no foundation because God has been rejected. We have leaned to our own understanding. And here's where we are. And God says, look, if you want to get it right, you've got to look to me. You've got to reason with me. Isaiah 1 and verse 18. You've got to trust me. You've got to submit to my will. Who is willing to do that today? Not very many people. And yet Jesus Christ set us a perfect example in that regard at the Garden of Gethsemane. A couple of emails to finish off today's show with. Some good comments coming in to our email address and to the Rumble channel. Great Bible study yesterday. I just wish everyone could see this light. I wonder how many God will allow to see the truth. We need more laborers in God's work. Another one says, thank you very much for being the only reliable news service which has the insight to alert us to fake news and to draw our attention to reliable news, and all of it bringing to our attention what the sure word of Bible prophecy says about remarkable world events in these end times. It is sure, as Peter said, the sure word of prophecy. I mean, there's your foundation. There's your sure foundation. Another one responding to yesterday's show, I got goosebumps and excitement when listening to Mr. Armstrong when he was speaking with such passion at the start of today's TD. Thank you for the extended Bible study as well. Much appreciated during these days. This one responding to Friday's show, where Brent Nachtigall subbed in for me. At first glance, I thought that was Samuel Livingston. Enjoy your show. So there you go. Sam and Brent, brothers that they didn't know they had, or a brotherhood they didn't know about. Finally, it says, another one writes, the arrogance and vanity of the man who is enamored by his own reputation as a deal maker. He's referring to Mr. Nachtigall's show Friday. Perhaps Mr. Trump is adept as a business deal maker. However, he's woefully consumed by his distorted view of his abilities when it comes to making peace. And then there's a reference there to Jeremiah 6 and verse 14, which we read earlier on the show. One final one. Great show today. Wow, everything concerning prophecy is happening so fast. Your Bible studies are getting more intense, fitting the times, says God's true light is now shining. That's a good one to leave off on. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.